The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, Patrick Cox here. Did you hear the one about the two translators on board a ship during a big storm? Can you swim? One of them asked. No, says the other. But I can shout for help in 9 languages. Huh. You get many more of those at translators' conferences. Now, even though translation won't exactly save you from drowning, it is essential. It's also much overlooked. You only really notice translations when, you know, there's something wrong with them. Over the next few podcasts, we'll be exploring how translation impacts our lives. With the first installment, here is Big Show host Marco Werman.
To kick things off, I wanted to speak with someone who's been a big influence on how I think about translation.
Hello.
Hello, Mom. It's Marco here in Boston.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm fine. This is my mom, Marjolein de Jager, and I only was able to pronounce her name properly when I was 17, right?
Oh, no. A lot sooner, because little children do much better with funny words than big grown-up children.
All right. We're kicking off this series, Mom, about translation on the show, and I couldn't help but think of you since you've been a translator for many years now. How old were you when you did your first translation or something approximating a professional translation?
About 16, when I had enough hubris, as adolescents tend to have, to think that the rest of the English-speaking world would really be interested in Dutch poetry. So I started with the most difficult genre of all, which is poetry, and did what afterwards I thought was actually a fairly decent job.
So your PhD was in French literature, but then you taught public school for a while, and then you started translating again, Francophone African literature. How did you get into that?
I know,
but you tell our listeners.
When you were in the Peace Corps, I had just finished the PhD, and we came to visit you in Togo, which is a French-speaking West African country. And I was really fed up with doing academic writing, and what I really wanted to do was go back to translation. And you led me to a friend who gave me the first West African Francophone novel I ever read, Le Soleil des Indépendances, or The Sun of Independencies. And after that, I just went to the Alliance Française in New York City and started looking at what they had.
Mom, what do you love about translation? Because, I mean, given how little you're sometimes paid, sometimes less than a penny a word, is it a labor of love?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, to me, and one of my favorite books on translation, called Performing Without a Stage, compares translators to the actor who have a script and who then interpret that, performing the script of the writer. And that's, in a sense, what translators do. They rewrite what is being given to them in another language.
Ma mère, my mother, and veteran translator, Marjolein de Jager. Okay, so if you go by what's in the Bible, we've been in need of translators since the Tower of Babel, which reminds me.
The Babel fish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. If you stick one in your ear, you instantly understand anything said to you in any language.
If only the Babel fish from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy did exist. No worries, though. We've got David Bellows with us. He's the author of Is That a Fish in Your Ear? And he's going to translate translation for us.
Is that a fish in your ear? The answer is no, it isn't. It's a translator. I mean, there's something going on that is very clever, but it's not magic.
Yeah, well, Google Translate doesn't have the same elegance as the Babel fish. So take us back to the genesis of translation. What were the first translations? How far back does it go? And why initially was there a need to translate?
Oral translation, interpreting, is presumably as old as language itself, because human groups have always spoken different varieties of language and needed some kind of middleman or go-between. But translating written texts, we do actually have an origin, a start point. Writing arose about 5,000 years ago, but it wasn't until just 2,500 years ago that there's anything that looks like a translation. And oddly enough, there are two of them that are almost simultaneous. In the middle of the 3rd century BCE, a community of Greek-speaking Jews in Alexandria in Egypt, which was then a Greek-speaking city, translated the Jewish Torah into Greek. It's called the Septuagint. There are lots of myths and legends surrounding it, but there are no surviving texts of the Old Testament that are older than the Greek translation.
And was that an attempt to convert, or was it just we want you other people to understand what this book is all about?
There are different accounts of understanding it. One story is that Ptolemy II, who was building the Great Library of Alexandria, wanted a copy of every known book in his library and in Greek. And so therefore his idea was to commission a translation into Greek of the Holy Book of the Jews, maybe. Another story is that the Jews of Alexandria had pretty much lost touch with the language of the Bible. It was a foreign language for them already, and so they actually needed it in Greek to carry on being Jewish. I mean, a bit like American Jews now. I mean, not very many American Jews really can read the Torah in biblical Hebrew. Mm. Within a decade or two of that event on the south shore of the Mediterranean, not terribly far away on the other side of the water in the southern part of Italy, a Greek-speaking slave in a wealthy Roman household was commissioned to translate Homer into Latin. And that, so to speak, the classical tradition begins there. And so in a way, you could say that translation of Homer is the beginnings of the invention of a literature in Latin.
So Greek into Latin, Hebrew into Greek. What about English? What impact has translation had on the language we speak?
Like all, as you say, young languages, English was made by translation. Translation from Latin, above all, translation from French. Actually, one of the great mysteries that my medieval colleagues tell me isn't yet really solved is why Geoffrey Chaucer, the father of English literature, who was, of course, a French speaker, who professionally worked in French and whose family lived in French, decided to write the Canterbury Tales in English. He certainly didn't have to. He could have written them in French. He was very good writing poetry in French. But he didn't. But Little England of that time was a country that was very multilingual because the upper classes spoke French and the peasants spoke some kind of Anglo-Saxon. English was just emerging in lots of different dialects in north and south and west. And had it not been for translators, it wouldn't have been a language very much worth learning.
What words have come into English through translation?
Huge numbers of words came into English in the mashup of the French that the Normans spoke and the Anglo-Saxon that the people spoke. And so English often has two words for the same thing, one of French origin and one of Saxon origin, like, you know, sheep and mutton. Yeah? Sheep was what the peasants looked after and mutton was what the masters ate. And mutton is the French word and sheep is the Germanic or Saxon word. So we're constantly translating between these two as we speak English and navigate the different registers of language that are more or less French, depending on how high or low the register is. But I suppose if you want a kind of very straightforward example of a word that's in English only because of a translation and not because of any other need, then there's that famous modern word robot. A robot's actually a Czech word. And it came into English in the translation of Karel Čapek's novel in the 1930s. Robot means a worker in Czech.
You know, I spoke with my mother before we did this interview, and she's a translator and talked about translating her first poems from Dutch to English when she was 16. She calls translation a calling. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's a calling in the sense that you can't live off it without some other serious form of employment that pays the rent. So it's a calling in that sense of something you do because you love it, because you think it's worth doing. When you are a translator, you tend to translate quite a lot of different kinds of things over the years. And part of the real pleasure of being in the field of translation is, you know, how much new stuff you come to learn and come to discover, have put in front of you, and get to know in a very intimate way, because translating a book is a way of reading it that is like no other. The real difference is that when you're translating, you're not allowed to skip anything, whereas when you're reading for yourself, you skip bits all the time. But translators aren't allowed to do that. So in a way, the translator of a new book knows that book better than anybody else. And that's a great privilege and a great pleasure. So it's all sorts of things. And if you want to call it a calling, that's fine by me. But I don't respond to it quite like that.
I gather you had something of a language epiphany when you were a kid learning French.
Oh, who told you? I must have spoken. Well, it wasn't really an epiphany. It was a desperate teenage depression when I realized I was hopeless at sport and no good at art and no good at music, and I didn't want to do maths and I couldn't do chemistry. And the only thing I was any good at was French. So I thought, well, that's it. I'll be good at French. And I sort of decided around the age of 13 that that's all I was good for. When you make that decision at that sort of age, it becomes like a self-fulfilling thing.
So not a calling, just a self-fulfilling preoccupation.
Well, yes, I think so.
David Bellos, author of Is That a Fish in Your Ear? He was talking with The Big Show's Marco Werman. And we have several translation-related pods coming up in the next few weeks, but probably a couple more translation jokes. We have more at pri.org/language. The World in Words is on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. My handle is PatriCox, PatriCox. We have more podcasts that aren't about language, but are very good all the same. They're at soundworks.org. And next time, what translation upon translation upon yet more translation have done to the stories collected by the Brothers Grimm. Bye for now.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.